for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Shirley Jones had major starring roles in American classic films Oklahoma, Carousel, and The Music Man. And, of course, she portrayed one of TV's adored moms in the 70s hit The Partridge Family. Fewer fans may know of her Oscar-winning dramatic role in the 1960 film Elmer Gantry. In a new memoir, she talks openly about her life as a singer, actor, and now author. Shirley Jones joins me in the studio. You are welcome to be part of the program. Give us a call at 800-433-8850. Send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or send us a tweet. What a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you, Diane. Thank
and you. I want to report to all our listeners, you look exactly the same as you always have. That beautiful hair and that youthful face.
Oh, thank you. That's
very nice to hear. Congratulations.
Thank you. So do you.
Thank you. Talk about growing up in Smithton, Pennsylvania. First, where is it?
It's about 30 miles south of Pittsburgh. It's a very small town, 800 residents. And my grandfather, who came over from Wales when he was about 4 years old, decided to build a brewery. It was the Jones Brewing Company, and he built it in this little tiny town and employed most of the town. And my grandmother had 8 children, 4 boys, 4 girls.
Wow.
And all of the boys worked the brewery, my father being the youngest. It was great. I had wished I could raise my kids in a town like that.
You raised your children instead in?
In California.
In California.
In Beverly Hills.
And with a good school system.
Yeah, that was the reason I was there.
But what about your own growing up school system?
Well, you know, it was such a small town. Our public school had 2 grades in 1 room. And 1 teacher, you know, first and second, third and fourth. And then the high school was just 300 residents in the high school. You know, my class.
The entire
high school, yes.
Wow.
And we had to take a little bus to go outside the little town to go to the high school.
Huh.
And it was, and my class was only about 55 altogether, you know. And I try to go to the class reunion every year.
You were an only child?
Only child, yes.
So
yes.
That gave you lots of special feelings.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Although I think I always missed having brothers and sisters, but I had so many cousins and everybody lived so close. So the family was close, you know. And I was a big animal nut, you know. I raised everything from birds to mice to snakes to you name it. And wanted to be a veterinarian all my life.
Really?
Yeah.
But you had this extraordinary voice.
Yes.
How did people find out about your extraordinary voice?
Well, it was there. You know, it was a gift. And I was singing when I was, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, the youngest member of the church choir at age 6 in my little town. And I thought everybody could sing, you know, it was given to me. And I sang for all of the, you know, the family events and all the local, the Lions Club and the Rotary Club, you know, in town. And then during the summers, I would go to a place called the Pittsburgh Playhouse and study drama and dance and so on, you know, and love performing. But I still had this dream to become a veterinarian. So I was very mixed about what I was going to do.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. You were closer to your father than to your mother.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, my mother was very strong. I mean, she was, you know, and I was an only child, and so was I. I was strong, too. So, in other words, we butted heads quite a bit. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And my father was the sweetheart of the world. I dedicated my book to my father. I adored him, but he died at 49, as did my husband, Jack Cassidy, die at 49. So I lost 2 incredible men
at
that
age. How did your father die?
He had lung cancer. Uh-huh. He was a heavy smoker, and actually, I hate to say this, but he died of a doctor's mistake because he went in, had the surgery, had the tumor removed, and he was doing well. And suddenly, the doctor that did this surgery was out on another occasion, and there was sort of just a young intern working, and his other lung started to fill up. He needed a tracheotomy, and the doctor didn't see it. And
wow.
And he drowned.
You know? And Jack Cassidy, how did he
die? Well, Jack, you know, it was a horrendous thing, too. Jack was a heavy smoker, too. It was interesting because actually cigarettes killed both Jack and my father. Jack was smoking in his apartment. We were separated at this time. And a cigarette had gone into the Naugahyde couch, and he went out to dinner with some friends, came back after dinner, fell asleep on the couch. The couch exploded, and the whole apartment caught on fire, and he went with it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was horrible. Really horrible.
But I want to go back a bit because, I mean, the story of your getting these lead singing roles, it was sort of magical.
Very magical, yes. Again, you know, my life has been extraordinary. It really has been, Diane. I was, every summer we'd go to New York City, my parents and I. That was our holiday. And I just graduated high school, and I was on my way to college to become a veterinarian. And we were in New York. This was July. I was going to college in the fall. And I knew this pianist that I'd worked with at the Pittsburgh Playhouse. So I called him, and he said, come on, Cheryl, come on up. We'll sing a couple of tunes, you know. And he said, listen, Rodgers and Hammerstein's casting director is having open auditions for anybody that wants to sing for him. They had about three shows running on Broadway at that time, and their shows ran so long, they had to keep replacing chorus people all the time. Now, I didn't even know who Rodgers and Hammerstein were. You know, I mean, I was this little kid from a small town.
Sure.
Anyway, he talked me into going and singing. I stood in line with everybody else, got to the stage, sang for the casting director, and he said, Miss Jones, could you wait a few moments? Mr. Rodgers just happens to be across the street rehearsing his orchestra for Oklahoma, which was about to open at City Center and go out on another tour. He said, I want him to hear you. And I said, well, I guess so. You know, what did I?
What did you know?
Exactly. And all of a sudden, down the aisle comes this gentleman, and he said, Miss Jones? And I said, yes. I said, what'd you say your name was again? He said, Richard Rodgers. Rather sternly.
Yeah.
I sang for him, and he said,
what did you sing?
I sang The Best Things in Life Are Free. Huh. That was sort of my, you know, up-tempo ballad.
Yeah.
Then I sang Lover in a high soprano key, and I sang a little song that my pianist had written just for me, and three songs. And he said, could you wait about 20 minutes? I'm going to call my partner, Oscar Hammerstein, at home, cancel the rest of the auditions for the day.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, I want him to hear you. You know, it's my first audition anywhere, anyplace, anytime.
Ever.
Now, my pianist said, Shirley, I hate to do this to you, but I have to leave. I have an airplane to catch. It was some sort of a holiday. And Roger said, never mind. We'll think of something. I waited. Down the aisle finally comes this very tall gentleman by the name of Hammerstein. And he said, Miss Jones, do you know the score of Oklahoma? And I said, well, I said, I might know some of the music, but I don't know the words, and I'm talking to the lyricist, you understand. he said, never mind, I happen to have a score here. I said, but Mr. Hammerstein, my pianist had to leave. I have no one to play. And Roger said, we have the full City Center Symphony across the street.
Oh, my
now,
God.
Now, I'd never heard a symphony, seen a symphony, let alone sing with one.
Surely.
I know. My first audition anywhere. It took me across the street. I held the score in front of my face so I didn't have to look at the two gentlemen. And I sang, People Will Say We're in Love, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning in Oklahoma with the City Center Symphony.
Oh.
Three weeks later, I was in my first Broadway show.
Let's hear one clip from Oklahoma.
Strong, blubber like a baby if her man goes away, weeping and wailing how he's done her wrong. That's one thing you'll never hear me say. Never gonna think that the man I lose is the only man among men. I'll snap my fingers to show I don't care. I'll buy me a brand new dress too. to sigh of the romance behind me. Many a new day will dawn before I do.
How easy was it for you to learn this music?
Well, it was very easy. Even though I couldn't read music, and I never could read, I still can't read music, but I had such an ear, you know. Again, it was a gift that was given to me. I would hear a song once, and I was able to sing it, you know, so I had that too. I had that really good ear for the sound.
So you just began doing this. You had no fright on the stage.
You know, I wasn't sure. I was so young. I'd been in the business such a short time. I thought it happened to everybody. I didn't know that I was, you know, show business is easy. I don't know what people are talking about.
And of course, out the window went this ambition.
Yes.
To become
a veterinarian.
A veterinarian. Shirley Jones. And when we come back, we'll talk more. Hear more of her beautiful voice and take your calls. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Me, never have I wept into my tea over the deal someone told me. Many a new day will dawn, many a red sun will set.
And with me here in the studio, the woman with that gorgeous voice, Shirley Jones. She not only has that voice, she has acting chops as well. You were the first and only singer to be put under personal contract with Rodgers and Hammerstein. Tell me about that.
That's right, yes. My first show that they put me in was South Pacific, and it was the last 3 months of the Broadway company. Mary Martin was no longer in it. You know, it was just the understudies. And I was one of the nurses, and I had one line, which was great. So I was an actress finally, too, you know. And it was, "What's the trouble, knucklehead?" was my line.
I love it.
Well, Shakespeare and Chekhov don't come in there.
You can still deliver that.
Yeah,
absolutely. And what was it like to work with them?
They were wonderful. They were just so wonderful. You know, Hammerstein particularly was an incredible man. You know, Rodgers, you know, was a little bit of a ladies' man, so I had a little bit of a thing with him about that. But he was wonderful. What I did was really wonderful, Diane. He invited me up to his office, you know, and he locked the door and he put his arm around me and he said, "Do you have a boyfriend?" And I said, "Oh yes, I'm engaged." I said, "You know, of course I." And he said, "Oh well, yeah, you know, he'll wait for you." And say, so you can. And I said, "You know, it's so wonderful to have a grandfather here with me."
Oh, weren't you a smart lady?
How about that?
Absolutely.
From then on, it was wonderful.
And I want to make sure that listeners have the number to call, 800-433-8850. How did you come to play Laurie in Oklahoma?
Well, I sang for them. I went into South Pacific, and they immediately were thinking of me for the role of Laurie. That's why they put me in their show and signed me to a contract. I was the only person ever put under personal contract to Rodgers and Hammerstein. I was never under contract to a studio or anything like that. And under that, I did the South Pacific on tour, and then another show, and then did Oklahoma. And while I was on tour with another show that they had, they sent me to California to do the screen test with Gordon McRae, which was wonderful, which was unusual. He was already cast for the film. And Fred Zinnemann was the director, and he was a wonderful film director. I was very fortunate to have him as my director on the test. And after I finished the test, he said, "Miss Jones, have you ever acted before a camera before?" And I said, "No." He said, "Don't change a thing." He said, "You're a natural."
If there's anybody out around this yard that can hear my voice, I want them to know that Miss Laurie Williams is my girl.
Really?
And she went and got me to ask her to marry me.
They'll hear you all the way to Katoosie.
Let them.
Let people say we're in love. Who cares what happens now?
Just keep your hand feels so grand in mine. Let people say we're in love.
What was it like working with Gordon McRae?
He was wonderful. I was so fortunate, and I was such a fan. You know, when I was about 16 years old, they had a radio show called the Teen Timers Club. And Gordon hosted the show and sang on the show.
Huh.
And every Saturday morning, I would turn that show on to listen to him sing. And I thought, oh, it's the most beautiful voice I ever heard. Little did I know that I would be singing with him.
But it's a few years later. Combination of those two voices. Could you feel?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yes, it was wonderful. I loved him. He and his wife, Sheila, you know, when I had my first son, Sean, you know, they became the godparents. And Sheila's still alive, but she's in a home now and she has dementia. But they were wonderful people.
I'm sorry.
Wonderful.
Tell me about what you think made Rodgers and Hammerstein so great.
Well, they were the most incredible music writers, I think, ever. I mean, that's my feeling. Everything they did. I mean, the score of Carousel to me is the most beautiful music ever written. And by the way, my opinion was shared by Rodgers himself. He said that that was the best thing he ever wrote. And I agree. When I hear it, I cry. You know, it's so beautiful.
both you and I have tears in our eyes.
I open my concert. I'm still doing concerts all over the country. And I open my show with If I Loved You, and I close with You'll Never Walk Alone.
Ah,
the most beautiful music of
absolutely.
All time.
Absolutely. You know, I understand that Frank Sinatra was originally supposed to be in that film. What happened?
That's right. Yes, absolutely. Well, actually, we rehearsed. We did everything. You know, Frank was thrilled about playing the part, and he was cast. And we did all the pre-recordings. Whatever happened to those, I don't know. But and all the costumes, all the rehearsals. You know, you rehearsed a musical movie at that time almost like a Broadway show. There'd be months of rehearsal before shooting started. So I did all of that with Frank, and he was thrilled. He said, "Shirley, it's the best male role ever written, you know, for a singer." And well, then Booth Bay Harbor, Maine was where we were shooting. And I left for the location, Booth Bay, and we were out on a dock and ready for the first scene with Frank. Suddenly, and I knew that, by the way, that we were going to be shooting in two separate processes, regular CinemaScope and what they called CinemaScope 55, which would mean we might have to shoot some of the scenes twice. That's what they were doing then. But everybody knew that. And Frank arrived in his limousine from the airport, and he saw the two cameras right on the dock where we were. Henry Wilson was the director. He said, "Why the two cameras?" You know, everybody looked at him, and Henry said, "Well, you know, Frank, we're shooting in two separate processes." And Frank said, "Does that mean I'll have to shoot a scene twice?" He said, "Perhaps sometimes." He said, "I signed to do one movie, not two." Back in the car, back to the airport. The first scene on the dock in Booth Bay Harbor. The producer, it was the Efrens, Phoebe and Henry Efren were the producers. He came over to me with tears running down his face, and he said, "Shirley, where's Gordon McRae?" And I said, "I think he's doing a nightclub act with his wife, Sheila. You know, he said, "Can you get him on the phone?" He gave me some quarters on the dock, and I put it in a payphone.
No cell phones at that time.
Exactly right. And believe it or not, I got him on the phone, got Gordon on the phone, and I said, "Gordon, how would you like to play Billy Bigelow in Carousel?" He said, "Give me 3 days, I have to lose 10 pounds.
Wow.
That's how he got the part. But, you know, I found out later, and this was just rather recently, a couple of years ago, because I would run into Frank every now and then and say, "Frank, what happened? What was it?"
"Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it, Shirley. I don't want to talk about it," he'd say. A couple of years ago, I was in a press conference with some of the old guys, you know, the old geezers from the press, sitting in the back row. And they said, "Shirley, don't you know why Frank left?" I said, "Do you?" They said, "Oh, yeah, everybody knows." "What was it?" Ava Gardner was doing Mgambo with Clark Gable in Africa. And she called him and she said, "Unless you get your fanny down here, I'm having an affair with Gable."
Wow.
Down he went.
And he lost her anyway.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
He lost her anyway. You write a great deal about your relationship with Jack Cassidy.
Absolutely, yes.
He was a complicated fellow.
Yes, well, he was bipolar, you know, which we discovered later. Yeah, very much bipolar. And at that time, you know, now they have all kinds of sort of drugs and things you can take for that, but there wasn't anything then. And he was a heavy drinker, and I came to know later on drugs as well. So it was a combination of all those things, but he was the love of my life. I mean, he had everything. He taught me everything. I was this very young, naive little girl, and he was about 8 years older.
How old were you when you married?
22. And, you know, he was handsome, debonair, taught me the right foods to eat, my first martini, my first everything. And I was a virgin when I married him, you know, and he taught me everything I ever wanted to know about sex. And that was it. And I adored him. And one of the reasons that I wanted to please him in every way, shape, and form is that I was the breadwinner. I was the movie star. And he, you know, we'd walk into a room and all the attention would be, and I got to the point where we'd walk into a room and I'd go and sit in a chair and let him take over. Or I'd go to the ladies' room and stay there, you know. I wanted to please him so desperately. And I wanted his children and all of that. So, you know, but it was a tough go for him, just a tough go because of who I was and what I was, you know.
Had he been drinking and using drugs before you were married, do you think?
I don't know about that. I don't think so. I think it basically started, you know, after we were married. And, you know, and we had a show that we were, I worked with Jack all over the place. We had a show called The Marriage Band, which we took all over the country. We had singers and dancers and our own band members and everything else. Played the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas 3 times with our show and everywhere else. And then I did Wait Until Dark, you know, the play where I played the blind woman. We did that on tour all over the country together, you know. So we worked together a lot. And I, as I said, you know, marriage to me was definite. I mean, I wasn't one of these people that said, oh, I'll get a divorce if I don't, if I'm not happy. That was never me. Marriage.
Well, it was your family.
Yes.
It was your upbringing.
Exactly.
It was what you
knew.
That's
right. Exactly. It is what I knew. And so I wanted to make it work, and I adored him, you know. So.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. You have some very explicit data in this book regarding sex and your sexual life with Jack Casty and others. But the question becomes why you put it into the book.
Well, you know, I'm almost 80 years old, as we said. And when Simon & Schuster came to me.
You're such a young looking
I don't know
person.
About that, but
yeah.
I figured if I ever was going to write a book about, you know, everybody knows me about my career, Mrs. Partridge, you know, Marrying the Librarian, all of those things. And fortunately, I won an Academy Award playing a prostitute, which gave me the longevity I've had in my career. Otherwise, when you're a singer, they don't think of you as an actress, you know. So I decided it was the same kind of idea when I decided that if I was going to write a book, yes, my career, of course, would be a part of it. But I wanted people to know about my personal life as well, that I'm not just a robot that stands up and sings, that I have feelings, and that I married the two men that I fell in love with. You know, I was never, you know, Jack was the love of my life. And then when he died, you know, I married Marty. We're married 35 years. And I never could have married the sort of 9-to-5 guy. I had to have somebody that was a little odd, and both of them were. And both of them made me laugh. You know, Jack made me laugh, too. And I'm still laughing with Marty. But I figured if I was going to tell all, this was the time to do it. And I wanted people to know that you know, what I did with Jack was for Jack mostly, you know, and anything that he wanted, I was willing to do. And finally, I stopped that. But I wanted to please him because I was the breadwinner. I was the one that was, you know, and I wanted him to feel good about himself.
We have a brief cut from the film for which you won an Academy Award. You play the prostitute Lulu Baines. She talks about Elmer Gantry.
To Elmer Gantry, God is an all-American football player with a long white beard who carries lightning in one hand and a bag of tricks in the other. And Gantry has the high-pressure style and personality to sell this God even to big city slickers. He can make innocent people feel guilty and bad people feel good. Gantry has a voice made for promises.
Can he save anybody?
Can he?
Can he? Anywhere, anytime. In the tent, standing up, laying down, or any other way.
And he's got plenty of ways.
Lulu, was you saved by him, Lulu, honey?
Sister, I was saved by him way back in Schoenheim, Kansas. Love. Love is the morning and the evening star. And what is love? Not the carnal, but the divine love. Oh, he gave me special instructions back at the pulpit Christmas Eve. He got to howl and repent, repent. And I got to moan and save me, save me. And the first thing I knew, he rammed the fear of God into me so fast I never heard my old man's footsteps. The next thing I knew, I was out in the cold, hard snow in my bare little soul.
Really extraordinary that you moved from the big musical to this extraordinary drama.
Yes, it was. And as I said, you know, Burt Lancaster was the reason I got the role in Gantry, because the writer-director, Richard Brooks, didn't want me. You know, he just didn't think I was right for it. But Burt fought for
clearly
me.
Clearly you were, Shirley Jones. And when we come back, it's your turn. We'll open the phones.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Cigna, a global health service company dedicated to helping people improve their health, well-being, and sense of security at Cigna.com. By the Cy Sims Foundation, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts since 1985. CySimsFoundation.org. And by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at MacFound.org. This is NPR.
It's Listener's Choice Week on Fresh Air, featuring favorite interviews from 2013 we're sure you would have chosen had we asked. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who co-wrote Superbad and this year's end-of-the-world satire, This Is the End. And we listen back to our interview with astronaut Chris Hadfield about his 6 months in space. Join us.
We're back with a very special guest, actress, singer, Shirley Jones. Let's open the phones and first go to Seaside, California. Hi, Shauna. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Diane. I really love your show.
Thank you.
My question for Shirley is about her personal realization and moments of success, because you talked about being so young that you didn't really realize the scope of what you were doing or the magnitude of what you were doing and how successful you were. So in this industry, you know, it can be your success can be measured in the money that you make or the fame or whether you're in demand as an actress. And I wonder for you, what was your personal moments of realizing that success?
Well, I have to tell you, when I, you know, after I did Oklahoma, then I did Carousel, and I thought, well, I guess I can sing, you know, but I still wasn't sure. I think when I won the Academy Award, you know, I think that that really gave me the longevity I've had in my career, because then I proved myself as an actress.
What did you say? Do you recall?
Yes.
When you got on the stage?
I do. And my husband, Marty, said, "Shirley, I don't know why you said that." I said, "This is the best moment of my career." He said, "Why didn't you say the best moment of your life?" I said, "Because it wasn't the best moment of my life."
Good for you.
Having my children was the best moment of my life.
I feel the same way. Absolutely.
So, but it gave me the longevity I've had.
All right. To Orlando, Florida. Destiny, you're on the air.
Hello, Diane. How are you guys?
Fine, thank you.
Great. I just wanted to call, and I didn't really have a question, but I just happened to turn on the radio, and Shirley was speaking about how her early life and how she started around the age of 22, which is the age that I'm at now.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yes, yes, it is. And generationally, there's a gap between where I'm at and her audience. But your spirit alone, I'm going to go home and just Google everything that I possibly can.
Oh, aren't you sweet? That's nice. Thank you.
Yes, very. It's just very refreshing to hear somebody. I don't know. You just speak so great.
She really does, doesn't she, Destiny? Thanks for calling. Let's go to Hearst, Texas. Kristen, you're on the air.
Hi, Ms. Dream. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to thank Ms. Jones. I grew up with your partnership with Rodgers and Hammerstein and watching the Partridge Family. And I used to listen to my Music Man soundtrack on cassette at night when I was afraid to go to sleep.
Oh, that's so nice. It's a beautiful score.
I really appreciate a God-given gift for music because I have not been given that gift, but my husband and my children have.
Oh,
and
that's
I've had the joy of watching them perform together in our community theater.
Oh, how wonderful.
Music
Man,
and Oklahoma, and in a number of other Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals. And I'm so happy to be able to share those musicals and that musical tradition with them. And that's a lot to do with me growing up listening to you.
That's very sweet. I'm so pleased. Thank you.
About that musical.
It was so wonderful. To me, it's the most beautiful music ever written, you know. And I have to tell you, Diane, the interesting thing is that my son Patrick and I have been performing this all over the country. And next year is the 50th anniversary of The Music Man, and we're taking out a concert version of the show. I'm going to be Mrs. Peru. He's going to play the lead. And I'll show film clips, talk about the movie, and I was pregnant with him all during the shoot, and he kicked Robert Preston because I wasn't able to tell anybody. And so it's a wonderful show. The public will love it because I'm going to be 80 years old and I'm working with my son, you know, all over the country.
What a treat for you.
Yeah, it is.
But this music, so
isn't it
beautiful.
Gorgeous? It really
just
is.
Absolutely.
It's
beautiful.
A perfect musical, you know. I think Meredith Wilson's life, that was his life, and it's just, it's a perfect musical in every way.
What do you think about today's music? You know, Barry Manilow was on this program just a few weeks ago, and we were talking about the fact that there are no singables.
That's right. He's so right.
And here you've got these beautiful songs.
I don't get it. I mean, I don't understand the music at all today. I mean, I because when I listen, I can't hear the lyrics. I barely hear a melody. And, you know, I don't know what it's about. So it's not my kind of stuff.
So when you turn on radio,
right,
to listen to music, what do you listen to?
Well, normally, I don't even turn the radio on,
you don't.
to be very honest with you, because most of the time, there isn't anything that I want to listen to, you know, and unless I'm listening to you, you know, but I mean, as far as music goes, you know, it's rare for me, and so I play my own music at home.
All right, let's take a call from Akron, Ohio. Hi, Kim.
Oh, hello. I didn't want to make anything but a star-struck comment about both you ladies. Diane, I love your show.
Thank you.
I've been listening, and please stay on the air as long as possible.
Thank you.
Now, for Miss Jones, I was telling the screener that I used to watch The Partridge Family, and I know everybody my age, I was, you know, young, about 17 back then, they tuned in for Days of Cassidy. I tuned in for you.
That's nice to hear. Thank you.
I love you so much.
That's great. Thank you.
Hello, world. Here's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
We had a dream we'd go traveling together. We'd spread a little love and then we'll keep moving on. Something always happens whenever we're together. We get a happy feeling when we're singing a song.
Traveling along, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy. We'll make you happy. We'll make you happy.
This really made your stepson, David Cassidy, a big star.
Big, big time.
How well did you get along with him at the time?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. I mean, yeah, he was delightful, and he was so good at everything that he did, you know. I mean, they came to me. I was the first person cast in The Partridge Family, and the producers came to me and said, you know, how do you feel about your stepson, David Cassidy? And I said, why? We're thinking of casting him as Keith Partridge. I said, he'd be perfect. Now, he didn't know I was cast, right? I walk on the set, and he's standing there. He turned around. He said, what are you doing
here?
I said, I'm your mama.
Did you enjoy that role?
Yeah, I did very much. You know, I wasn't going to do a television series because the managers and agents said, don't do that, because if it is successful, you'll be that character for the rest of your life and your movie career will be in the toilet, you know. And they were right about that. But I was offered the Brady Bunch first. And I turned it down because I didn't want to be the normal 9-to-5 mom, you know, taking the roast out of the oven. But when Partridge came along, I was the first working mother on television. And here we were, a family, you know, working together with music. And I thought, wow, that's great. I want to do that. And it gave me an opportunity to stay home and raise my kids, who were school age at the time. So it was a marvelous thing for me.
How many years did that continue?
Almost 5.
Ah.
About 4.5. Yeah.
So it was good in every way?
In every way.
That's marvelous to have that feeling. You did divorce your first husband.
Yes.
Why?
Because he wanted a divorce. I never would have done it. He, you know, he was all over the place, and he was bipolar, as I said, and to the point where he was dangerous in a way. I had to have him taken away in a straitjacket from the house because he was lighting fires in all the fireplaces and scared me to death with my kids, you know. And so after that, then he separated from me and he said, I think you should divorce me. And I thought, I guess I should, you know.
Did he spend any time trying to get better?
Yes. He went into therapy. He, you know, finally got some medicine for the bipolar thing. And in many ways, I think when he died, I think he was sort of on the upward step because he seemed to be better, you know, then. And the last words he said to me, Diane, he called me and he called me Mouse. He said, come on over. He had an apartment. He said, come on over, Mouse. Let's have a drink together. I said, Jack, I can't do that. You know, I really can't. And he said, you know, we had what dreams were made of. I said, I know that. That was the night he died.
He really was the love of your life.
But then when I married Marty, everybody said, you're marrying that crazy man? What's the matter with you? You know. But I married two crazy men. I said to everybody, you know what? I think I'm the one that's crazy. It's not them.
What do you think, as far as Marty is concerned, why were you attracted to him?
He made me laugh 24 hours a day. And, you know, I never could have been married to the 9-to-5 guy with the pipe and slippers. It's not my type. And I love to laugh. And he did it. And still is doing it 35 years later.
But do you think he's a little nutsy?
Yeah, he's mellowed some now.
How did your kids feel about it?
Well, in the beginning, they weren't happy at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a hard time from that standpoint, you know. Finally, you know, Ryan and Patrick came to the fore, and they were fine with him. Sean still held out for quite a while, my oldest. But guess what? This year, Easter fell on my birthday, March 31st, and Sean called me and said, I'm having a big party for you and my little girl, his youngest is two. It was her birthday. We're going to have an Easter egg hunt. I want Marty to come. I want him to be here.
How wonderful.
It's been great ever since.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. There's a call here from Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air. Nancy, are you there? Let's try her.
Yes. Hi, Diane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's an honor to be on. And unlike the previous caller, I do have to confess that I watched The Partridge Family for David. But
I see. That's funny.
The story that I really wanted to share for you, Miss Jones, is that my parents were married in 1952 in a wonderful Methodist church in Middletown, Ohio. And at that time, my mother requested at the wedding that they play your song, You'll Never Walk Alone.
Really?
At the end of the ceremony.
Wow.
And as the story went, the minister actually forbade her from doing that, and they weren't allowed to play the song at the wedding because it wasn't a traditional religious song.
Right.
And so I think my mother carried that in her heart for years, and it was always their song from my parents, and they're still alive. They just celebrated their 62nd wedding anniversary.
Oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
So in honor of that 60th wedding anniversary, I've asked Shirley if she would sing a bit of You'll Never Walk Alone.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high. And don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark. Oh, after all the talking, it's not as easy.
Beautiful.
Thank
Shirley.
You.
And to you, Nancy, and to your parents, happy anniversary.
Thank you so much.
And you're most welcome. Shirley, what's next?
Well, as soon as I go home, which is tomorrow, Saturday, I start a movie, believe it or not, 4-day movie. It's a religious movie going to be shown Christmas Eve. And
for television?
Yeah, for television.
What's it called?
It's called Miracle on Flight 232.
Huh.
And I play, an older lady that she's going on the plane. But I had been, worked on airplanes for a long time. And this father brings his little girl, and he's going to put her on the plane, and she's screaming and crying, don't leave me, Daddy, don't leave me, Daddy. And I say, I'll take care of her. I was a hostess on an airplane, and I'm going on that plane. And the whole thing is everybody gets on the plane, and there are all these different couples. There's an African-American couple that are fighting all the time. There's two guys that, you know, are at odds. Everybody's at odds, and I'm with this little girl who's screaming. They tell us to get off the plane because they can't take off, and it's Christmas Eve.
Oh.
And everybody's still not happy. And I go out and find this old Christmas tree, and I put it up in the airport. And I said, okay, everybody has to trim the tree. It's Christmas Eve. And they do it with chewing gum and, Kleenex and everything else. And this little girl has a ring that her father gave her, and she loses it. And she's like, I can't find my ring. The father comes back, said, I want to take her home. I don't want her to go on the plane. She said, Daddy, I can't find the ring. And we look all around, and it's in the little cradle of the baby Jesus that we put down there. That's the movie. So,
that's the movie. And you also had this wonderful new book.
Yes.
Titled simply, Shirley Jones. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane. It's nice to be with you.
I loved it. And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the William and Flora